Live at CSUN 2010, this is Michael Off, and I caught up with the man, the myth, the legend, the bargain connoisseur, Mr. J.J. Meadow. How's it doing, buddy? It's nice to meet you in person here.
Nice to see you, too. And we're here over at CSUN in San Diego on Blind Bargains, and we are talking about a whole bunch of cool things with Saratech, a new version of RIM. Why don't you tell us about that?
Okay, our new RIM is version 2.1, and what we've greatly improved is the screen draw so that, I mean, it speaks so much faster. You know, in the past, in almost any remote technology, there's usually a little bit of delay mm-hmm. by the time you hit a key and you get the speech input back. We've almost nulled that out. Now, some of that, of course, depends on your internet connection, but we've really improved the speed of the audio and video communications and just the ability to get that screen reader feedback right away. So, of course, the right. folks who don't know what RIM does, basically it lets you use a computer regardless of what screen reading technology is on it, or if it has no access technology, then you hear the speech of system access. So we have a lot of blind IT professionals at Ohio State and other facilities who use this to work on computers. And, of course, the sighted folks, they're working on their machines. They don't know there's a blind person on the other end, which it doesn't matter and it shouldn't. So,
how do they get set up? They just install a little piece of software, isn't it? Or?
Yeah, there's a client and a host. So basically, you send the person, I don't know, 5-6 meg file.
Sure.
And they just run it, and then basically you agree on a hotkey. So when it sends a request to connect, it can even be space bar or something a little more complex, so you mm-hmm. don't do it by accident. And you hit that, and then basically you're connected. And, of course, you can always abort the connection if, for some reason, you felt uncomfortable what the other person was doing on the other end. This is something that is already in Saratech's technology in a smaller scale. Not much, but a slightly smaller scale in our remote access that SAMNET members have, mm-hmm. where the difference is there. You're mainly controlling the computer of other system access users, but it will work with window eyes as well, or JAWS, or maybe it's just a little more sluggish, but okay. It can be done. But this is a standalone thing, and it's more for IT professionals, so it has a little more cost to it. But we're really excited about the speed enhancements now. It's working really well.
Well, not only for IT professionals, but anybody who wants to access even their own computer remotely, right? It would work for...
Exactly. Or remote training, that's the biggest thing is...
Right.
I talked to a lot of these people that drive hours and hours between clients all over the state, and while some people may need that one-on-one, most do not. Maybe they need it initially, but eventually you can do training or tech support, repair problems. I've talked to people that say, wow, I drove 4 hours just to unmute a sound card. You know, I could have remoted in and done all that right from my home. So it's a very powerful tool, and the fact that it works regardless of which access technology really opens up a lot.
Sure. Is this available on the Build a Bundle, the monthly plans?
Not remote access, not the remote incident manager.
Okay.
No, but the Build a Bundle, at least as far as working with SAMNET, you can do for $9.95 a month, and that will work with Window Eyes or JAWS, but the difference is you're not, two differences, you're not going to be able to work on a person's computer who has no access technology, and the other thing is the remote incident manager, you can actually do work, reboot the machine, and have it automatically reconnect once. Right.
Oh, okay.
So those are really the two big differences.
So how much does the RIM cost then?
Basically about $100 a month, about $99 a month.
Okay.
For that technology.
Sure. Okay. So that's the newest stuff from.
Yeah.
From
other than that, we've got the AE hotspot. We mentioned it at ATIA a little closer to form here, but essentially, a lot of people like Accessible Event, and you've been on our tech chats with it.
Sure.
But sometimes corporate entities or universities want to keep everything internal. They don't want it out on the web. So this way they can run this, you know, box. It is literally a computer. And then everybody can connect to it, and all the documents can be shown. You can even share Wi-Fi. Or, I mean, you can connect via Wi-Fi, but you can share an internet connection if you so desire with the Ethernet port.
I see.
Or you can keep it all just internal for showing your Word documents, spreadsheets, and web pages, and PowerPoint slides, and so forth. So there's a lot of interest.
So you're doing a presentation at CSUN. You set this box up, and then everybody else that's in the room can connect and follow along with the PowerPoint.
Within a couple block area, and of course that depends somewhat on the terrain, but yeah. Mm-hmm. You could cover a couple city blocks in a normal environment, so, you know, large enough to cover, you know, a whole floor of a hotel or definitely a conference area.
Right.
Or a school, you know, sure. A couple main buildings and a university. So it's got enough transmission
so it's
power.
It's a pretty powerful. You know how many milliwatts it is? Or it does sound like it's pretty powerful.
I don't know the exact specs on it.
Right. But it sounds like it's pretty souped up compared to your average router, which only goes.
Yeah, it's not.
Feet.
Yeah, it goes beyond the average router.
Right.
Which would only go maybe 50 feet or something.
I'm thinking maybe like the general session at one of the conferences that's, you know, a couple thousand people. It sounds like it would work for most of the room.
Yeah, it would cover all of this room that we're in here, which okay. is a good-sized facility.
Right. What is the, I assume it's completely accessible from an administrative point of view, correct?
Well yeah, exactly. You would get in and do what you needed to it right through a web admin.
Okay.
Because it's designed to be simple. You know, you plug it in, turn it, you know, hook up the antenna, turn it on, and it boots, and it's ready to go. And right through a web admin, you would put whatever presentation materials you want on the device.
Have you landed on a price for that yet?
It may depend on what you want to do. There's two forms of it. Mm-hmm. You could purchase it outright for about $10,000, or you can rent it on an as-needed basis. So if you just do an event like this, a couple events a year, it might be more cost-effective to rent it. But
right.
if you're going to use it on any regular ongoing basis, you know, like the NFB has purchased one because they see the need for it for other training materials.
Okay.
So again, that price may fluctuate a little bit based on what you're trying to do, but that's kind of where
so
we are with it.
It's almost like it's a type of service you could contract maybe with a hotel, so then they could offer it as an option maybe to their presenters or if they're renting out meeting space to people. Or
well, exactly, because you go in a hotel and you may not be able to connect to the wireless or they may charge an exorbitant fee, but you could go in there, do your own presentation and bring this box in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could have a Sprint card, and that might be pushing it a little bit. Well, you could push web content, but obviously you wouldn't want other people using the internet, but you could share a connection. So it opens up a lot of opportunities, again, in education.
Definitely.
And the government sector where they use really strong firewalls and
right.
security, they would rather have it on site and have it all internal.
Have you considered maybe offering the rental as a service for like the, you know, obviously you could now, but it's a little more, you know, available, say like at the major conventions or like at CESA next year. Is that something you guys are looking into? So for presenters that want to have that at their presentation can easily access.
Yeah, I don't have the prices on the rental, but that
right.
could be done. You could give us a call toll free at 866-202-0520 and inquire and find out, you know, about renting a unit and how many days you need it and would ship it to you. And then you could just send it back when you were done with your presentation. So that would, barring anything beyond my scope here, I would think that would be available for by the summer convention
okay.
so that if folks want to use it for ACB or NFB,
they could do it.
They could certainly do it.
Okay. And if people want more information on this, they can go to serotech.com?
Or? That's right, serotek.com.
Okay.
All right. Well, we're going to turn the tables now. I'm going to talk to you.
Okay.
The first big question, it was going all over Twitter. How did you find lodging out here at CSUN 2010 for $26 a night?
Well, did a lot of searching because we weren't originally going to attend this conference at all just because of, you know, it's a very nice hotel, but, you know, a couple $100 a night adds up very quickly.
Yeah,
so
very pricey.
It is. So I'm actually staying at a nearby hostel. And for anybody who's not familiar, a hostel is kind of like a community dorm where what I get for $26 is a bunk in a room of six bunks, you know, other five people that I don't even know. They do give you a locker so you can lock up your laptop and other valuables. And then there's several community rooms. There's a kitchen, there's a community kind of social room. Even the bathrooms is down the hall. You don't have one in your own room, so I know that scares away some people. One advantage of that, though, is it's right in the middle of the Gaslamp District here in San Diego, which is right in the middle of
food,
the
entertainment, nightclubs.
Lots of nightlife. You can hear it outside your window. It isn't the quietest place, so if you're you know, looking for something quiet and peaceful, that's not the place to stay.
But it's only like, what, 7-8 blocks from here? So you just head over on foot and you're set?
Exactly. It's a close walk. There's a lot of stuff. Everything's walkable. It's very walkable downtown. There's a grocery store a couple blocks away. And it's you know, it's something different. I figure I've never stayed at a hostel before, and you know, why not try it once? And I'm pretty happy with the experience.
Yeah, I mean, your mileage could always vary there. You never know what five people you're going to be bunking with. You got someone loud and obnoxious or weird hours.
You can pay about $60 for your own room there.
Okay, you so you want. Could go that extra and have your own room if you
there
want.
There is free breakfast. They actually have, they throw pancakes in the morning, or you, they just have the batter if you want to make your own pancakes. There is Wi-Fi there, so you get some of the modern amenities. There's actually power plugs in your locker, so you can lock up your laptop at night and charge it.
Or your iPhone. Very cool. Very cool. Two other things I wanted to ask you about. You are selling the iBill, and so even if you don't have any today, I think in the next few weeks you'll have another shipment, and we wanted to suggest that because sometimes dealing with the company directly is a little... I mean, they deliver the product. I don't mean to say that, but to me, it's a little sketchy. There's no way to order online. You're filling out a form. Some people did not get return calls, and when you do, you're giving out your information over the phone, and just a little backwards in terms of the way e-commerce is done today, but you are selling some of these iBills, and you've already done one shipment, right?
We had one shipment. We got it in and sold it in 4 hours. Now, so what we're recommending people do now is go to atguys.com and place your pre-order for the next shipment. We're expecting to get another shipment in about 2 weeks from the time of this recording. And you know, we're definitely communicating with everyone. I mean, to their credit, they are swamped, and I think the expectation is even outweigh their demand. And they are doing what they can to keep up with this. But buying it through a dealer like us kind of gives you an extra layer of communication. So instead of just hearing from the company, you also get to hear from a dealer who's in direct contact and knows when the next shipment is coming in, and we can get you on that list and make sure that when the next shipment of iBills come in, that you'll be able to have one.
Now, as soon as I bought it, I read something about there was going to be an update to some of the bills, maybe the larger ones at this time. Mm-hmm. So the only downside could be there is no USB port or any way to upgrade the firmware. I guess they would have to be sent back at that point.
There's trade-offs when you have a device that's $99 that did what we used to pay $300 or $400 for.
But it works, and it works very well. I have one right here in my pocket, and I love it. And, Saeed handed me a 5, and I could verify that it was a 5 when I got out of the cab, so it was very good.
Exactly, and it's tiny. I mean, it just fits in the palm of your hand. And compared to other solutions that are out there, I mean, we sell the KNFB reader, but it reads currency slow. That's not what its bread and butter is. It's kind of a side gig for it. And this thing is very efficient and it's fast. And especially, the vibrate mode is really ideal for the deafblind and just for privacy. And we're very happy to be selling it.
Well, very good. So go to atguys.com and put in your order there, and you'll be notified, I guess, via email when it's ready to go.
Exactly.
Yep. Okay, very good. Well, you've been here 2 days. What have been your impressions? What has impressed you here at the event this year?
You know, first of all, for all the talk about how the proprietary note taker is on its way out, I really am quite impressed with the design of the new VoiceSense QWERTY. It's the lightest note taker that I've seen. With the built-in GPS receiver and compass, there's a lot of potential as far as portability and GPS applications. They're predicting probably 15 or 16 hours of battery life. Maybe proprietary is on its way out, but I think there might still have some a bit of a last gasp. It's definitely an impressive little note taker.
But they don't have the price on that yet, right?
They do. They're kind of feeling that out at this point.
I did get a price on the DS. GW didn't give it to me, but HIMSS did tell me $499 on the BookSense DS. So we do have that information. What else has caught your attention here?
Oh, let's see. The ID Mate Summit is interesting. Those are really cool type of devices. You run into a price.
$1,299 is a bit hefty. That is true.
Right. A lot of that is because of their barcode scanner. And on the surface, seems like they're trying to totally jack up the price, but they are using an industrial $700 or $800 barcode scanner in that product. So it's the best Omni that you're gonna find, and you're right. You pay a little bit for it.
But you have that portability,
right?
And you can even mention, like, you sell a barcode option if you don't mind being tethered to a USB, so it's not something you're going to take into the store,
right?
Or you have to be careful, if you're trying to use it in the kitchen and cook and so forth. But there are some more economical options if you simply want the barcode capability with maybe minus a little bit of the portability.
Exactly. There's a bit of a trade-off, but, that option is only $299 compared to $1,299, so $1,000 difference. I embarrass myself. I have a recording that'll be going up of me singing karaoke.
Oh, yeah?
With the Braille karaoke system over from Nippon's Telesoft, the makers of the Sika Braille display.
Right. So what rendition did you mutilate?
I started to sing I Just Called to Say I Love You,
Well, that's a god-awful song to start with. I don't
exactly.
know.
Well, see,
maybe you couldn't mess it up too much worse.
I couldn't make it any worse than it already was.
There you go. Well, very cool. Anything else grab you here? You really made the rounds yet? Of course, the exhibit hall just opened yesterday.
Yeah, we're starting to catch on to things. You know, I still have a lot of people and things to see. A lot of HumanWare doesn't really have anything new here because they did all their new stuff in Florida. The Pearl from Freedom is interesting. At least it looks a lot more sturdy than the iPal, which is probably the competitor to that. There's that new folding camera
right.
that hooks up to OpenBook. The intro price of $600 is good, but when it bumps up to $1,100, you've been in the wonder again about price. You know, if they can sell it for $600 now, why don't they just keep it there?
And have you spoke with James Gashel over at KNFB Reading about the updates on the Blio? I spoke with him in depth. And he's talking maybe the next few weeks we'll finally have something to show first in the Windows PC platform.
We're planning on doing a hands-on with him a little bit later today. And it went from February until then I heard May. So I think they bit off a little more than they could chew, you know, trying to do the desktop version, the iPhone, you know, and then maybe another version all at the same time and getting them all working and accessible. So.
Right, and as I pointed out, I would rather see it working right, but... Yeah, that was a CNET, and James claims that was actually, you know, the interview on CNET where someone actually threw it out as February, maybe that's what they thought was going to happen. But
right. Well, and then they probably rushed a little bit because they wanted to debut at the Consumer Electronics Show, which really is smart. More adaptive technology companies should do that and have set up a booth there. I'm sure there's a big cost to do that, but it seems like that really helped with the publicity of the unit up front.
Well, definitely. Anything new here? You just seen basically updates to existing product lines?
Yeah, GW and HIMS had probably the biggest splash of new stuff that we saw. Between that and the Pearl, those are the two new things. Olympus has their new digital recorder.
That's right, got to play with that. I like that unit. Of course, you don't have the voice recognition or the TTS built into it as of yet.
Right, so it was really kind of hard to see it. The thing that disappoints me of that is the battery life. Of that.
About 20 hours? You thought that was kind of low? Well, I guess, yeah, it's compared to what it used to be.
Yeah, this 520 is about 55, and they said that's not a replacement for the 520. They are going to keep selling this for, I mean, Olympus sells a lot of different recorders for a lot of different needs, so this will remain an option.
So the difference between that and your 520 is going to be the voice recognition on some commands, the full TTS of all the menus, what they're claiming, and...
Some Daisy support.
Some Daisy support.
Which isn't really going to help with a lot because I won't support NLS or Bookshare.
That was my point. When he said 2.0 or 2.2, it's a little more than that. I got the vibe for RFB&D, you know, just by the initial press release. And they talked about the education market. So that kind of honed me in on RFB&D maybe the first thing. But maybe they can do something with Bookshare.
Have you talked to Plex Store yet? Because the wireless capability for the Pocket seems pretty interesting, especially coming from, you know, the Plex Talk was kind of written off as, you know, the stepchild of digital recorders, but now it seems like they're kind of making a bit of a comeback recently. Initially, they're going to have file sharing support wirelessly. That's coming next week. And then in a couple months, we're hearing support for podcasts and internet radio on that device.
Yeah, I haven't spoken with them yet. I did look at some stuff from IRTI, which I thought was kind of interesting. A set-top box. It's a accessible DVD player, internet radio. And of course, then there's another one with an actual scanner and then the Wi-Fi radio and DVD.
Okay.
But again, this set-top box coming in at or around $1,000. Again, I don't know how many people will... move up to that price point as far as the content of the internet radio. He said 260, other than you can add a keyboard and add your own. So maybe if that's successful, they might partner.
Yeah, you could purchase a Windows Media Center, you know, PC and everything on it for a lot less than $1,000.
Well, again, here's the, I guess, ease of use. Yeah. If someone older just wants something that they can move through their menus and not. And that's the thing. I don't know. You would know better being in your space of blind bargains. How much of a market is that? You take 100 disabled people. How many want? How many would pay more to have some standalone reading solution or something like this new set-top box, as opposed to going through all the intricacies of interfacing with a computer?
I think the dominant thought that I'm hearing from a lot of people is they don't expect to pay more, especially after the iPhone and some of the other things. It really should be something that's just included in universal access. If you're renting a set-top box, you shouldn't have to pay twice as much to rent your set-top box just because it talks. And, you know, I would love to have it. It would, you know, if we had talking set-top boxes, I would probably spring and, you know, and pay for the plan with DVR and all that. But, you know, as it stands right now, I stick to analog television because there's no reason to pay for it.
Yeah, hopefully there will be some developments along that line, but I sure haven't seen them yet.
Right. Well, there was that company in the UK that was, I'm not sure if IRTI is related to that at all, but I know there was the talking set-top boxes they were demonstrating. There's a YouTube video floating around of that.
Yeah, well, this is not TV. This is just DVD and...
So it won't even read the program guides.
Right. It's just a DVD audio CD player with a built-in NeoSpeech Caden Paul to tell you what you're listening to, assuming you have good ID3 tags. Easier said than done, especially with some of the trading that goes on out there.
Okay.
But and then the Wi-Fi radio, so those three pieces. So you're talking 1,000. I don't know. Be curious to see how many people grab... Yeah. Or you can have it with scanning capabilities for $1,900. So
that's
again,
the second craziest thing. Yeah. Here. The craziest one I think is the $1,100 Braille labeler.
I hadn't seen that
over at Enabling Technologies. They're importing it from Japan, so I guess there's some cost. But it's just a roll of label tape attached to a USB port and a computer, and it prints out labels.
$1,100 Yikes.
So if you have $1,100 burning in your pocket, well.
There you go. Believe me, there's definitely a lot of different technologies here, you know, that can take your money. Now, one I looked at, I thought was kind of interesting, called Tactiles. Have you seen that?
I've heard of it, but I've not gone to
Braille,
see it.
Braille Legos, basically.
Okay.
Kind of modified. He spent $200,000 for equipment to mod them so that he can make them into Braille to teach children. I guess it could be blind or, you know, BLD or what have you. But he's got things anywhere from $50 to $600. And I don't know how many people would spend $600 on Legos, but if they thought it might teach their child to read, then maybe. But it was an older gentleman, and I don't think he makes a lot of money doing it. So,
right.
You know, in some case, my point there is that some cases you do have high prices because you have a very limited market, and maybe some of that's them not knowing how to market the product once it is made, or again, you never know what the level of interest is going to be.
No. And of course, there was a lot of talk around, you know, Mike Cavill's blog post, which has, you know, been probably the most explosive discussion of the whole month. But, you know, I'm not going to immediately say that every high-priced item is not, you know, not worth what you're paying for it. There are certainly situations where the price way exceeds what you receive for the product. But there probably are still some cases where it's at least somewhat justified. We'd all like to see it come down in price. But, you know, some of these people are just small businesses that are, you know, trying to get by and, you know.
Well, that's why we're really striving for the mainstream accessibility and the inclusion, is that's going to get the price down.
It is.
What are your thoughts? Did you see a comment someone posted? They were upset about the BookSense DS, that the fact that the screen being added would increase the cost to the blind. Of course, Mike and I are of the feeling that actually you're looking at it backwards, because what, maybe 1 in 8 people are actually totally blind and the other 7,
right,
87% are partially sighted, so you really increase the market.
Yep.
And so that should get the price down.
I think it's misread, though. I don't think the screen, and they're not really touting it as a low vision solution. The screen,
yeah, I was going to say, it's a little too small.
The screen on that is tiny. It's really more for learning disabled. And then that, they're not discontinuing the XT. If you think that you'd rather have the Bluetooth and some of the other things instead of the screen, then by all means get the XT.
Right, it's just another option.
Price.
You're right. So it's more of the LD market, you think, more than low vision. Because even though it is OLED, a 2.2-inch screen is going to require a decent amount of vision.
Right. I mean, it is tiny, though. There were some complaints about the original keyboard layout and how the keys weren't tactile enough. I didn't have a problem with it, but some people do. And so they solved that, too. So people that are looking for a more tactile presentation, you get that in the DS as well.
What are your thoughts about there being so many players? Do you think someone's going to have to fall off?
Is there just... Oh, absolutely. There's at least, now we're up to 5, I think, unless we're missing one.
Yeah, right.
The Bookport, PlexTalk, Stream, the BookSense, and the Milestone 312. And, you know, there's going to be at least one odd man out. Some people were saying that the Plex store is going to be overtaken by the Bookport Plus. I don't think that's the case, because they have enough other things going for them, especially internationally. That might be the only thing that saves a couple of these. They might fizzle out a little bit in the U.S., but it seems like worldwide there might be a big enough market. And that's not even counting the NLS players, which are free. So,
yeah, it's an interesting time. And I talked to James about what impact is Blio going to have as, well, now you're going to have these hundreds of thousands of books, far greater than anything the NLS program could come up with. Of course, I would argue that many of their patrons don't use computers. But how this will impact companies like RFB&D or Bookshare?
Right.
How's it going to change the landscape of websites?
There's two different things going on. I know some people prefer RFB and NLS because it's human, you know, recorded audio. And there is a definite market of people that definitely prefer, they don't want text-to-speech reading them their books. So I think they're going to be around for a while. Bookshare might be a little more interesting. It really is going to depend on how expansive the Blio catalog is of books. Bookshare does have a leg up in that you pay $50 a year and that's it. With Blio, a lot of it you're going to, you know, we'll be paying like everybody else for a title.
Well, there'll be a number of books free, so the question is, are you going to be happy with the free content?
Exactly.
Or are you going to be ready to pay full price like your cited peers? But as long as you have accessibility to the book, and that's the other thing I was concerned about, is this may be a time that we really have to advocate to make sure that we have access to these books, because I know you finished college a few years ago. Imagine the capability to just go out and get the college textbooks at the same time as everyone else and have them fully accessible and usable.
And that's one of the things that I think Bookshare has an edge on right now. I don't see there being a lot of free college textbooks on Blio. It's the type of thing that, considering what they usually charge for those titles.
Oh yeah, they're very expensive.
You're still going to need Bookshare for that, and Bookshare is free for students anyway.
But what percentage of your college books can you get on Bookshare?
It really depends on the your major and the curriculum you're in. You know, if it's a major that a lot of other blind people have gone through, or if it's gen ed classes, you have a halfway decent spot. I would say you get maybe between a quarter and half of your books there.
Oh, that many? Okay.
It really depends on your major. I mean, most of my semesters I had one or two that I could find, and since then they really have done a good job. The collection is over more than doubled in the last year.
Well, and they've got partnerships now, some publishers, O'Reilly and some folks, so that helps.
Definitely. So yeah, there's a lot to see here. I'm glad I came. I wasn't even planning on it until a couple weeks ago, but there's a lot going on here. A lot of the open source movement is definitely taking shape. You see that over with GNOME. We talked to them a little earlier.
Yeah, I spoke with GNOME as well, and Mozilla Foundation.
Right. You probably got more than we did this time.
I'm at about 18 right now.
Oh, you're way ahead.
But this is my last day, so you got plenty of time to catch up. I'm out of here tomorrow, so I'm going to try to get about 10 more.
But, right. Yeah, it's fun doing this, and it's good to see. I think Stephen Garrett was even doing some, so it's good to see that there's a...
Yeah, believe me, that's as you've said, and, you know, we don't look at it as competition. I like to have different people because everyone asks different questions or covers different companies. So we at Cerro Talk, we welcome the more people that want to get in the podcast space and go out and do quality interviews, because it's all about educating people as to all of their choices so that they can make an informed decision and get involved in the purchasing decision.
Exactly. And one of our big things is making sure there are a lot of... I mean, companies really, for many years, kind of just had a free ride, and there wouldn't be anyone that would ask them anything negative about them. It was all, you know, everyone would just give them all the positive PR that they wanted. And, you know, we'll do it when it's justified, but we want to make sure that things are being put in perspective. And... you know, Main Menu was doing that for a few years, but then, you know, over recent years, it's kind of transitioned through a few different hosts, and, you know, that program is, that, I mean, that was the original program that people quit.
Oh, definitely, and it gave you true 2 cents if something was good or it sucked, you know?
Right.
And I will do that to an extent, but I'm also apprehensive to say that something's bad because it may not be for me, and maybe I don't get the purpose of this product.
Yeah, exactly. We've done that before too. Sometimes it's better to let the interview stand on its own.
Just present the facts, ask the questions, and let the user decide for themselves. Right. Well, that's good or no? That's why would I do that? So,
right. But it's definitely been fun. There's some new blogs popping on the scene again, which is good to see.
Yeah, you got Blind Mind. You've got and some new radio stations from Blind
Access,
folks.
Access for us.
Yeah, right, Ryan.
So you know, it's good to see that some new. People coming on board, and I just hope to only just see it expand. It'd be great.
Exactly. Well, unless you got anything else, I'm going to let you traverse to some of the other vendors. All right. I've got a limited time here to work, but it's been good talking with you.
Meet you
in person. We go all the way back to Test Pattern Radio. Oh, my God. TPR.
That's awesome. I thought about doing a 10-year reunion.
Well, there you go. I think most of us are still out there floating around.
There you go.
Well, let's do it.
There you go.
Let's make it happen.
Awesome. For the five people that are listening that actually get that reference, we'll see.
Yeah. We shall see.
All right. Well, thank you, Mike. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks a lot, JJ from Blind Bargains. I did that earlier, too. From CSUN 2010, theseraltalk.com blog and podcast, and SamNet Radio, your station, your community. This is Michael Loff.
And for Blind Bargains, I'm JJ Meadow.